This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along here on your Wednesday. We got the good, the bad, the dumb coming up. We'll get back into the NFL. As I said, been saying, and we'll say this a lot throughout the season, the Wednesday days and the Wednesday shows, there's still a little buzz from what happened the week prior, and then you got to start looking ahead to what's coming up. And what's coming up on Thursday night is a really, really good football game, as the Kansas City Chiefs will take on the LA Chargers at Arrowhead Stadium. Look, the one thing about we know about the NFL is that you can't lose your Super Bowl aspirations in the first couple of weeks of the season. It's a long year with a lot of things that still go into play. And if you're a team that struggled in week one, you got to fix some things by week two or three. Yeah, if you're the New England Patriots, it's not a time of urgency, but you don't want to fall 0-2 in a division where maybe Miami is now going to be a contender. But in this case, there are two teams that are going to play on Thursday night that are coming off very good wins, and wins that were anticipated because of how good their quarterbacks are. Patrick Mahomes, 5 touchdown passes. It's not surprising, but without Tyreek Hill, it's still an impressive feat. And Justin Herbert picked up where he left off against the Raiders, 3 touchdown passes in that game and in that win. And yet, this game isn't going to define the division. We'll get to that later on in the season when we get more games under our belt and there's a more understanding of where the season is going. But it doesn't mean that the game isn't going to be important. I think whenever you have a division leader that you're chasing and has chased for a while, no matter when you play that particular team, whether it's week 2, week 14, week 9, the end of the season, whenever it is, there is a level of where you want to see where you are in comparison to that team. Peyton Manning and the Colts were that way for a long time. Brady and the Patriots were that way for a while. Drew Brees and the Saints, all of those teams that have had really strong presences in their own divisions as teams were like, this is how we're going to build in the draft to compete against you and what you're doing and what you're anticipated to do for the next couple of years. The Chargers have been on that path. The Raiders also have been on that path. The Broncos have not, because the last 5 seasons, they couldn't figure out who their head coach is. They couldn't figure out who their starting quarterback is. They couldn't figure out what their identity was. You feel like it's got a little bit of that now, but the Chargers and the Raiders have definitely put themselves together to compete with Kansas City. And Thursday night is going to be a very, very good showing for both of those teams. We'll talk about more of that later.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb time here on your Wednesday. Glad you can be with us. By the way, on Twitter, you can hit us up at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. Ron with 2 N's, please. But that's good. Here's even a better good. It's the good of the day.
You know what? I don't think I've ever said these two words in the good. Gender reveal.
Gender reveal. Yeah, normally these things are stupid.
Normally these are bad, dumb, and I usually put them there. But Bills running back Isaiah McKenzie actually had a really good gender reveal.
Did he just come out and go, it's going to be a boy?
Pretty much. Pretty much. Yeah. Well, his childhood friend, lifelong friend, she is due to have a baby with her boyfriend or husband, who cares. But he put them up in his restaurant down in Florida. Said, okay, you know, here, you guys, for Thursday night's games, like, here, you guys, and I will find a way to do a gender reveal. And he did it right after scoring that touchdown.
Oh, he did.
He said, though, he's like, you know, there were a couple things that went wrong, because the first thing he was supposed to do, he said he was going to write it on his shirt, like underneath his jersey.
Right.
Write it on a T-shirt and then, you know, flip his shirt up. But he forgot to do that before the game, and he kept forgetting about it. Then when he scored the touchdown, he immediately went to the first camera he saw and did his own thing.
Oh, I got you.
And started celebrating.
Right.
And then he was high-fiving with his teammates, and then he remembered, like, oh, wait, this is the moment to do it. So then he ran to a camera again and just started screaming, it's a boy.
Oh,
knowing that his childhood friend that he grew up with, they think of each other as brother and sister, was watching in his restaurant with all the family and friends gathered, and that's how he did the gender reveal.
Not bad. bad. Not bad. Good for him.
He didn't have to burn down a mountainside.
No, he did not. Yeah, which is where most of these go.
Yeah, anyway. Most of them end up that way. So,
yeah.
Although it was kind of, I mean, you know, if you have a famous friend that could do something like this, or you know, that moment, that would be.
Oh, if you're, yeah,
that's rememberable. That's like, I love it.
You're right. Setting off fireworks in a dry forest is a dumb idea.
Yeah.
But having a football player say it on national TV is pretty awesome. So,
yep.
Yeah, there you go. That is
now, he did get a little bit of hazing from his friends because it's like, what are you doing? Because none of his friends knew. His teammates didn't know.
Right. I got it. Yeah. he didn't tell them.
Like, are you having a baby? What are you? What's the?
Yeah, what's that all about? Right, exactly. All right, what's the dumb of the day? Bad of the day?
This one might take a while.
All right.
You might have some thoughts on this. And we might actually talk about this later, too. But the bad of the day, I've got to put it on the Bradys.
The Bradys. Yeah, okay, go
ahead. Yeah, so new reports are coming out. Giselle spoke out about her issues, and it all stems from her pretty much sacrificing her career to take care of her family with Tom. She thought that she was going to have a chance to rekindle her career, start up her career, but Tom decided to unretire, and that is why she is extremely unhappy about it.
So all of this was true. So like page 6 and all that stuff.
Page 6 happens to be true because she is now coming out and letting the world know, you know what? If Tom's going to unretire, I'm going to unretire.
Good. Good for her.
So I'm just curious how long this football season left for Tom.
You know, I will say I'm not a, you know, an expert in the gossip part of the world, like the TMZ world. I don't know, like I've never worked in that business. So, and I know there are certain things in that business that you kind of sources you trust and all things like that. But celebrity marriages, just from outside in, without knowing it, you know, doesn't it always seem to revolve around why they fail? It really revolves around one of us is going to have to sacrifice something, and neither one of them either want to, or when the other one, when one does, there's just so much resentment against the other that it just ends up breaking apart. Now, this might have just, because they've been together a long time, but the reality of it is that she probably got to a point where she was like, I'm not playing this game anymore. Like, we're not doing this anymore. Like, you, I've gone to these football games. I've raised the kids.
Yep.
I did all of this stuff, but there was an agreement that I was going to be able to do the things that I wanted to do in life. And like, you got to do the things you wanted to do in life. And now you're taking that back away from me just because you can't let this go.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I don't want to get into their marriage, but yeah, I mean, I would do the same thing.
It's amazing. I mean, we kind of said page 6, like, yeah, but that's tabloid. It's tabloid, right, you know. Come on, how would they know? But that's what it is. I mean, she's quoted as saying, I have a huge list of things that I have to do, that I want to do. At 42, I feel more connected with my purpose.
It is amazing. That business is really amazing when you think about it. Like, it's very rarely wrong. Otherwise, they would just be filled with libel suits all the time.
Right.
And I know they word it in a way. There's plenty of lawyers that have helped them word articles so that they can avoid those kind of things.
It sounds more like speculation.
Yeah,
it
sounds more like speculation than fact. I mean, there's ways you can get around it if you're really sneaky. And these publications are really, really sneaky like that. They really know the fine line they can walk. But some of this is like, these celebrities are like, no, because it's going to open a whole bunch of worms and I'm not going to go near. And so that's why people believe them, because they end up later on, they go, that was, you know, Cindy Adams was right this whole time.
Exactly.
There is trouble in paradise between whoever and whoever, right? Yeah.
So this will be in an article coming out in Elle magazine for their October issue. We'll probably will be revisiting this, because I'm sure that this article isn't giving us everything, just little tidbits to make us want to read it or buy it.
When Giselle talks about her career, is she talking about modeling on the runway, or is she involved in fashion now? Has she moved into that world where she's a fashion executive?
I'm pretty certain there's, I mean, maybe it's acting. Because she was in Devil Wears Prada, not just as a model. She was actually, you know, had like somewhat of a minor role.
She did? Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if she's wanting to do that. I mean, and it could be modeling because, let's face it, you know, she's looking at it going, I don't have a long shelf life, Tom.
Yeah.
And I sacrificed.
I'm like you. I mean, my window is to my 40s or wherever. I mean, yeah, there's every now and then, like, Christy Brinkley shows up at, like, 65 years old.
But, yeah.
But
Elizabeth
yeah,
Hurley, but, you know, we keep seeing like yeah. the photos just pop, but it's not, but they're not modeling.
No. But at the same, yeah, so she's probably like, but
yeah,
maybe,
could be
but,
fashion.
But even if it's not walking the runway, it could be like, I'm designing clothes. I'm involved in this modeling business, or I'm involved in this agency. I'm now managing an agency of models. Like, whatever it is, it's like getting into coaching after football, right? Like, there's a whole bunch of things you can do after football to stay in the football business. Is she like, you know, it's not just walking the runway posing in clothes. There's a whole bunch of things I could be doing in the industry that I want to be doing at 42 years old that you're preventing me from doing. So, no, I'm going to, you know.
So, yeah, that's where the angst comes in. So, I'm curious how this is going to reflect on Tom's playing this season.
I agree. Listen.
Because we all know, I mean, we know Tom is a competitor, but you and I, we've been married. And when you're having marital issues, it does affect. You know, thankfully, I haven't had experience, you know, drastic ones like this.
Oh, yeah. No. But I've been in companies where guys have left and they've told me later. It's like my marriage was on the rocks. I had to take a leave of absence. I had to go sort that out.
Or, you know, I mean, convincing someone to take a chance like, hey, you know what? I know you're loving this community, but let's move.
Yeah.
We got to do this. We got to do that. And that, I mean, making huge decisions like that. It's not surprising to me that this was the issue of him leaving for 11 days or two weeks, three weeks.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and going someplace just where it's like, you know, like we said, they're just taking a family trip. And it was probably to reconnect and figure out a way to make this happen. But they weren't able to find a way to make it work.
This is not one of those situations where the wife is like, how much more can you take? I want you healthy for the rest of your life. Don't go out there anymore. You could get hurt for good.
She does mention that too.
She's like, you promised me when you were over, I could do X, and now you're back into it and I don't get to do X.
I have to take another year and wait.
Yeah.
I'm not
waiting around anymore. No. We'll see. You're right. Look, guys, don't fall into the sports cliche of like, he's a gamer, man. Marriage is a whole different thing. If you're married, you get it. If you're not married, you will get it if you do get married. Trust me. He could, in week seven, he could go, that is it. I either lose her and the kids, or I play football for another half a year, and I'm going to choose my family.
Well,
you never,
I mean,
never know.
If the Buccaneers aren't competitive at all, I mean, I could see him just retiring. Like, you know what? This isn't worth it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys.
If his family's on the line,
season.
Yep.
And you know, this will have nothing. You know, I know we talked about this too. It was like, oh no, he's not going to quit mid-season because you know he was worried about his image. If marriage is on the line, he's going to throw that. Hopefully,
absolutely,
he would throw that image right out the window.
Absolutely. He's already got a son playing football in another part of the country.
Right.
That he's trying to go see, but he doesn't see on a regular basis. He's not going to want Giselle to take the kids to some other part where he's playing football and they're living in New York and he's got to go up there all the time. No, you're right. All right, let's get to the dumb of the day.
I only have one word.
Mm-hmm.
Brownie.
Brownie, yeah. What's this? What is that?
I don't know. If you guys didn't see it, the Cleveland Browns announced a new mascot? I guess.
Who chose this?
I don't know. You will notice that when the Cleveland Browns play their next home game, which I believe is Sunday, there will be a gigantic elf at the 50-yard line, and his name is Brownie.
Okay. I have a Mandela effect thing. I feel like I've seen this before, but I guess I haven't seen this before. Either it looks familiar of something else, or
I think it may be that. It
something.
Might be... Because, you know, I guess they took the image off of an old English elf type of thing.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
So it might be that, but I...
Because it is new.
It's new.
It's new, but I feel like I've seen this thing before. Where did it come from? Like,
Why? That was my biggest thing, was why?
Like, essentially, they don't have a mascot.
Yeah.
They were named after Paul Brown.
Right. So they've never had a logo on their helmet.
There's no logo. There's
they never even had the word Browns. I always get it confused with Bengals.
Yeah.
Because Bengals had
just the word.
Had the word for a while. It was not the Browns. You know, the Browns, they're named after Paul Brown. Their colors are orange. I mean, they don't make any sense. They're nicknamed they had fans who were nicknamed the Dog Pound. I don't know where Brownie is coming from.
I'm gonna do some research on this because when I see it, I go, I know I've seen this thing. I don't know where I've seen this thing, but you might be right. It might be a copy, or it looks very similar to a Christmas thing or something else. But yeah, I don't know. It's weird. it's a weird thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
And why now?
And why now is right. Exactly.
I mean, if I was the Browns, I would have done this during the hype of the Deshaun Watson fiasco.
Yeah.
You got to distract from that.
Distract from that. No doubt. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll continue along. And I will look up this Brownie the Elf story because I don't know what it is. And I got to figure out what the Browns were thinking. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we dug into this Brownie the Elf story, and there's a lot more to this than just some ad agency creating a quick mascot. This guy's been around a long time.
I guess so.
All right, so according to Fox 13's website, I'm assuming it's in Cleveland, the Brownie the Elf is getting renewed attention after fans voted to put him front and center on the home field. A giant version of the old mascot has replaced the Browns helmet at First Energy Stadium. If you don't live in Northeast Ohio, you may be unfamiliar with Brownie, but the character actually dates back to the team's debut in 1946. He was used in ads and media guides for years as the Browns won title after title. Legendary coach Paul Brown even toyed with the idea of adding him to the team's helmets, but never did. After Art Mundell bought the team in 1961, he began to phase out the mascot. When he moved the team to Baltimore in 1995, the team's legacy and Brownie remained in Cleveland ready for a rebirth. Brownie has been used more frequently in Browns merchandise and marketing materials in recent years, sometimes walked the sidelines as a mascot. So they have an actual mascot of this guy.
I've never seen it.
Okay, I've never seen that either. So he's actually like somebody dresses up as him. And walks around. That's okay. I've never saw that.
Okay.
Browns executive vice president and partner J.W. Johnson said Brownie's been around for a long time. I think people enjoy him and haven't really showcased him as much as we'd like to. So there you go. So this is wow.
I'm looking at images. He is at the stadium.
He's at the stadium. So there is a Brownie walk around mascot.
I've seen him on the football field.
Pretty wild. He looks mean and angry carrying that football on the field.
Now there's a photo here of Brownie and the dog.
Okay,
a dog, and I've seen the dog. But I've never seen Brownie.
And like I said, I feel like I've seen him before, but I probably saw something pop up on an old like Browns media guide or something like where.
Yeah, they have a vintage sign that I guess you could buy for $30 on eBay.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
It's a Cleveland Browns established 1946. You know, it looks like it's been weathered a little bit. And yeah, there's Brownie on the front and center holding
a
football.
There you go. All right. So the Browns were digging into their past and saying, you know what? We can now use this. Why don't we use this? And so they are. Now,
well, that was the thing, too. I mean, the message boards, once the Cleveland Browns announced this, people in Cleveland are extremely favorable. They're like, it's about time.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
It feels like, I'm trying to think of a team because I was about to say Steelers, but I have seen the Steel guy.
Yeah, Steely McBeam.
Yeah, I've seen him. I'm trying to think of a mascot that we've never seen before that's coming out and just be like, hey, all of a sudden we're just going to slap him on everything.
So yeah.
When did this come about? When I first saw that announced yesterday, I thought that was a brand new thing.
There used to be many of you probably remember this. I want to say it was in the 80s. There was a company, NFL got things called huddles, and they were dolls. And the dolls were of your NFL team, right? But the dolls were, there was one face, and the one, and then the doll would be whatever the team was, right? So if you got a cowboy huddle, the doll was a Dallas Cowboy. He wore a hat, you know, like he had cowboy boots on and whatnot. And the New York Giants, they all had footballs, big footballs. They were like little kids. They were dolls of kids with footballs dressed up as whatever the team was. The Giant had a club and a beard, and he was holding a little football. So it would give you the impression that he was larger than the other ones, even though he was the same size. The Steelers was a steelworker. He wore jeans. He had like a little bandana in his pocket. He had gloves, like steel worker gloves on, and just a Steelers jersey with a helmet. But for the life of me, I have no idea what they did with the Browns, right? Like, I have no idea what the huddle doll of the Browns looked like, because I didn't think there was anything. Bengal was a tiger. Jet was an actual jet with a face on it. There was all these different iterations. Now I want to look it up to see if they actually used the elf and went down that road, or did they just go, nothing, he's just a kid in a uniform. He's just a doll in a uniform for the Cleveland Browns. Because if you don't have an identity, you could be whatever you want, right? Like, if you are the Cleveland Browns and you're named after Paul Brown, you could be an elf, dog, cat, tiger, hippopotamus, elephant, whatever you want to be, right? Like, and why not go elf, I guess, back in 1946, elf. But what I'm surprised of is how many people were old enough to know that this was the mascot and wanted it back? Is this something you pass down generation to generation as a Browns fan? Do you say to your kids, now that you're a Browns fan, I want to sit back and let me tell you the story of Brownie the Elf? Because if you're 27, how are you voting for Brownie the Elf? So, I don't know. But
I'm looking at it right now. It's just a guy in a helmet.
Right?
It's just not an elf.
So the NFL huddle doll was the Browns in a helmet?
Yeah. 1983, it's a Huddles porcelain vintage. And it's just, I mean, I'm looking at the Browns. It's just a Browns helmet. And, I mean, like, you know, you look at the Dolphins one, it's a dolphin. And
yeah.
Look at the Seahawks one, it's a, looks more like a bald eagle than a Seahawk.
Or that's
no,
all
a,
it is.
No,
yeah.
I'm sorry, that's the Eagles.
Right.
That makes sense. Bald eagle and Seahawk
is
gray.
These were actually pretty cool. Like, I have a Steelers one. My brother has a Cowboys one. My father even has one of the Giants. They were kind of big in the 80s. And then there was also a thing, they were actual mascots on the sidelines back then. Like, the partnership was, they actually were mascots. But the Browns was like, there's nothing there. There's nothing. So maybe Brownie the Elf was like, let's give us something here. So there you go.
The Washington one's highly offensive.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, right. Very much so. Yeah.
But not to be outdone, I guess the Kansas City Chiefs one is not.
Yeah, the Kansas City Chiefs won. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You know, it was a different time. What can we say, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, the 49er is a guy, like, he's mining gold.
Yeah.
Look at it. He's got a goal. He's got a pickaxe and a beard. But yeah, you can only imagine what the Washington one was.
I mean, it looks like they're mascots, you know, bare chested, yellow pant thing or whatever, you know, like, I don't know what, yellow, long black hair. But then you look at the Kansas City Chiefs and it's a chief.
Yeah.
And that one's not too bad.
These things are kind of valuable now.
Like, yeah, they are. It looked like one that had a bunch of scuff marks was $40.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Can you imagine if you have something like that's decent?
I gotta see if mine is in my box of stuff that I have. So yeah, but that's
yeah, if you want to get a used Steeler one, if you can't find your Steeler one, Tony, and you want to get a used one, $30.
$30, that's not bad. Not bad.
There's another one for $40.
Yeah. Well, so Brownie the Elf. Good luck. That's great. All right.
Guess it has been around.
Yeah, it's been around. All right, we're gonna talk some college football coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
See what happens on this show? Sometimes we take you back in the memory lane on NFL memorabilia.
It's like a way back Wednesday moment right now.
Yeah. I'm showing my age a little bit, but do you remember getting like the Sears catalog and they had like a section in the catalog of like
toys?
NFL things? Well, toys was the big one. But there was also like NFL stuff you could get.
Yeah.
Like it was like, man, I had it all. I mean, I'm not kidding. I was decked out in Steeler gear and like you wouldn't believe. Winter hats, gloves, jackets. I had it all. So it's always the best. I've had more hats, shirts, stuff than I can count.
I know I've mentioned it before, it'll be like a mission of mine to try to find this again, but I had this poster in my room growing up, and that it included all the helmets of the NFL teams.
Right.
And you could change them.
Oh, yeah. They were like stickers, like little sticker things?
Stickers, but what was that?
Like color forms?
Color form. Thank you. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, they peeled off. They weren't stickers. They like peeled off.
But they would go back on and they wouldn't slide down or fall off.
Yeah, I think I had the same thing. Yeah.
And it was fantastic. I would sit there and with my friends, all right, let's do, prediction time and see how close we can get. And, and then I would always cheat. Yeah, obviously.
Right.
I'm like, no, I always had it here. What are you talking about?
There was, I know we talked about pencils. I remember the NFL pencils.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
They were the best.
Yeah.
They were the best. I know my brother and I would trade, but I always would use the Steelers pencil, and I would always hate it when it would be down to the nub and I'd have to change over to like the Seahawks. And I didn't really care about the Seahawks. But still, it was always cool. I had an NFL lunchbox when I was a kid. I remember that. So yeah, going down that memory lane, it was always fun. But NFL really knew how to market, man. They really did. They did a great job.
Look, it paid off, right? Did they have the idea of like, okay, let's not market to the older guys. They're already hooked. Let's market to the kids, and then we can really grow our business down the road.
Oh, no doubt. Exactly. Yeah. Down the road. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I can remember so many times, because again, it's really weird to have grown up kind of when we grew up to see the advancements in the way we consume games, right? And I think the same thing. Like when my son's my age, he'll probably say the same thing. Like
right.
When I was younger, it was like you had to wait till the internet told you what the there might be even a more advanced way to consume.
I know we've talked about it many times. The only way we knew, like I got to see other games, was the Monday Night Football countdown at halftime.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I didn't have cable as a kid, so I wasn't getting highlights on ESPN all the time, every day, all day. I mean, it was Monday Night Football was the only way I could see highlights. And can you imagine the pure terror of being a kid where your team and winning is the only thing that you care about? And then you have to watch Patriots Bills, and the only way you could find out if your team was even leading the game was maybe every now and then they would go to the studio to tell you, or you had to wait till halftime to where the studio host would be running through the scores, and that's when you would know at halftime what your score was. I can remember calling a phone number, an 800 number, to get scores back in the day to find out if my team was winning. Like it was a weird way to do it. But the thing is, and it's like all technology. You don't miss what you don't know what you don't have. Right. So you didn't complain that there wasn't apps on your phone to tell you what the scores were because you didn't have it. If you were a time traveler and you went back to the early 80s and watched football, you'd mentally lose your mind. Because you wouldn't have the access to the things that you want to have. I remember the first time I covered the Broncos for 10 years, and I can remember going to the game where they didn't have Wi-Fi. And if you wanted to have internet connection, you had to ask for a seat in the press box where you could plug into the internet, and that was limited. So you would bring a pad and a paper, and that's how you would take the notes. The first time that they had Wi-Fi, I brought my laptop to the game, and I was the most popular guy in my section because everybody wanted to check their fantasy football teams, and nobody was bringing their laptops. Now everybody brings their laptops, right? It's like you watch it over time. So consuming product, like the way the NFL has been so good at saying, you want more? We'll give you more. You want more? You give you more. Like, I am a little worried about the streaming thing because I don't want to subscribe to 60 streaming services to get every single sporting event that I want. That's my biggest worry, right? Like, my wife and I are kind of doing that now where we're like, how much cable do we watch? Do we cut cable? Do we not? What do we keep? What do we want? And my obviously concern is, well, I want to make sure I get every single NFL game that I can. And then I want to make sure I get enough college games that I can. And I want to make sure that if it's a CBS game, that I'm not losing local channels. But at the end, I don't want to be subscribing to this, or this to get everything that I want. But the NFL has done a very, you know, has taken the technology and moved it right along to the point of, you know, of just ultra consumption. Well, and yeah, there's still blackouts and all that other stuff. They still want to do that, but they've kind of relaxed that a little bit. I mean, again, you know, there was a time where you wouldn't get your local game if it wasn't sold out and all that stuff. But being like 7 years old and being like, I got to wait till the end of this football game that I don't care about to find out if the Steelers beat the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only way I'm going to know is when Bryant Gumbel tells me that's exactly what happened.
Not only that, but you loved. And I'm saying this is universal. Everyone did. Loved it when they broke from one game to show you a touchdown from another
game. That was the best.
Oh, it's like, the best. Hey, we're going to send it out to New York. Yes, you are. Come on. Show me.
And when they did the 10 minute ticker was revolutionary. Every 10 minutes, we're going to give you the scores of what's going on around the league. Like, fantastic.
You sit there and wait for your team to pop up.
Yeah, it was great. So. Real quick, college football games coming up this weekend. Really, there is this. This is the part of the schedule, right, where everybody slows down. This is the week, like week three. So this is what happens in college football. You got week zero, yeah. Week one, Labor Day weekend, a lot of big games, neutral sites.
Yep.
Right? That's basically it. Some teams open up with some cupcakes, but a lot of the big teams will try to square up against these big matchups in Atlanta, Arlington, wherever, New Orleans. Week two, you can still get some good matchups, but then there is a point where everybody goes, okay, we're going to start playing some teams that we're going to pay to show up. Now, for example, Alabama is playing Louisiana Monroe this weekend.
Going to be a close game.
Yeah, going to be a close game. Yeah, good. I can't wait. Louisiana Monroe, those Warhawks against Alabama. Now, Oklahoma's playing Nebraska, and that's a fantastic game because it's going to bring back a lot of the old, good old Big Eight rivalry. And that, remember when those two were a big deal, played game of the century back in the 70s. But Michigan's playing UConn. I'm thinking about other cupcake games that are out there. Baylor's playing
Georgia.
Texas State.
Does Georgia have a cupcake game?
Yeah, Georgia has a cupcake game. They're going to Columbia, South Carolina to take on the Gamecocks. So that should be a
relatively easy game
for them. Slip right through.
What if
win that one?
What if Spencer Rattler and crew get it together?
What if they do? What if we wake up on Sunday? Well, we won't wake up because it's a noon game, so you'll hear the echoes of Gamecock Nation reverberating throughout the day on Saturday.
So basically what you're saying, if that happens, we can hear Tony D across the land.
I've had very, very few moments of pure joy in my South Carolina. There's been a couple of them. One was in 2005 when South Carolina beat Florida and Urban Meyer's debut. They never beat Florida, and then they did. That was extremely thrilling. The other one was when they beat Alabama. They beat Alabama at home, and it was one of those games. If you've ever watched or follow a team that is as self-destructive at times as South Carolina's been, You are waiting for the inevitable where they're up by two touchdowns, but you feel like, oh, this isn't going to make it. You ain't going to make it. And then the time is just ticking, and you're like, they're going to pull this off. They're going to pull this off, and they did. If that's the case on Saturday, I can't even dream about it. It would feel so outside of my own realm. Like, I would be in a multiverse, like the idea of this happening. But if it did, it would be amazing, absolutely amazing. But South Carolina is still growing with Spencer Rattler. I saw on Twitter somebody said, can we all agree Spencer Rattler is not good at playing quarterback? And I was like, I don't want to say that yet. You know, I want to kind of hope that the season is going to be okay, that they're going to have a good little bowl game. But you know what? You know what I was talking to my son about over the weekend, because Florida lost to Kentucky, and I did tell him, you know, one of the problems that college football has is that there's a generation that is coming up that is, it's all or nothing. Now with some of these teams, it's like national championship or nothing. When college football for a long time was always about, you don't have to win it all. You can have a good season, go to a bowl game, enjoy the bowl game. And now those bowl games are like, nobody wants them. It's either like, I want a national championship or nothing, or I don't care about the Outback Bowl or the Citrus Bowl or any of these other bowls. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not. It probably will be when we get to the 12-team playoff, where there's more of an urgency to be like, get into that, right? Like, there's one of 12 teams. We certainly think we could be that. But then there's going to be a group of fans that will never get into that. And then what do they do? Like, will there be bowls to go to? I'm sure there will be, because that system is never going to go away. But at the same time, if you're not, will it feel like the NIT is now? Like, who wants to go to the NIT? Like, raise your hand if you want to go to the NIT. Well, only if you've had a season where you know the NIT is the best you can do. But when you're snubbed from the NCAA tournament, when they release the 68 teams and they're like, well, got to go to the NIT, people go, ugh, I don't even want to watch. Yuck. I was hoping to get into this show. Now, a school like South Carolina may never be near the top 12, but what about the 13th, 14th, 15th team? Like, if you've busted your tail all season long and you're not in that playoff, you want to talk about a mass exodus of players that are going to go, no, I'm not playing in the Citrus Bowl. See ya. People have been saying to me, do you think this is going to mean that, like, with NIL, that players will have to stay? Like, they'll have to play. And I'm like, well, if it's worded that way, but if it isn't, players won't feel any obligation to do it. There is going to be the same problems college football has, even with a 12-team playoff. The 12-team playoff is still going to leave enough teams out where those players are going to say, all right, you know what? I couldn't get into this show, and I'm not playing an exhibition game in January if I'm going to the pros. I'm going to go right to whatever facility I can go to. I'm going to start working out from my draft. And it's too bad. I cringe. I understand why they do it. It's cringy because you want that sort of feeling like camaraderie, and this is my last go around. But the more it's a business, the more we have to accept it as a business. The more that players are going to treat it as, what can I get from NIL? Who's giving me the best opportunity to make it to the pros? Which team is going to provide me the kind of income that I want when I'm playing for them? You know, which area of the country can I maximize my marketing? If those are all going to be in the factors, then don't be surprised when they go, and that business now is over. That's done. There's going to be a little bit more of that. No, don't get me wrong. There'll be a player that will say, no, these are my teammates. These are my brothers. I'm going down with them. We're going to have a good time. I'm going to get one last shot at this. This is my last chance of playing with some of these guys before it really, really becomes a business. But the reality is, there's going to be more players going, no, I came here for only this reason, and we were not shy about it. No, I did not choose this school for its academics. No, I did not plan to graduate with an engineering degree. I came here to play football. I came here to maximize my NIL deal. I made more money in 3 years playing at this school than my professors will make in their entire life. And I'm good with it now. My relationship with this thing is over. That's the world we have, like it or not. That's the way we are. All right, we'll come back, wrap up this hour. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to talk to Andrew Stocky of WTAE in Pittsburgh coming up next hour, because that still is the wildest game I've seen in a very, very long time. I mean this in all seriousness. You all know that I'm a Steeler fan, so there's a little fandom in this statement, but the Steelers, I think, tried every way to give that game back. Every single way. They're like, no, we got five. Don't worry. We got five turnovers, sacked Joe Burrow seven times, but don't worry. We won't move the ball on offense that much. And don't worry. We won't score a ton. you'll be right back into this thing. But it was a wild game. I mean, there was five possessions in overtime in a 10 minute overtime. That's crazy. 10 minutes in overtime is now starting to be like destined to make a bunch of ties. 10 minutes is, if you get a couple of defensive stops, it's 10 minutes is not a lot of time. Before you know, there's that moment in overtime when your team's in overtime, and you know this from the overtime game last year with the Raiders, that there's a moment where you concede either we're going to lose this game or we're tying, right? Like, you went down the field, you tried a field goal, you missed it, they get the ball back, but there's only like 2 minutes on the clock. And you're like, well, they're either going to kick a field goal to win this thing or we're ending up in a tie. And I hate ties because I still can't process them. They're like a half a game and figure it all out. But that was one of the craziest games ever. The Steelers should have blown them out but couldn't. So we'll talk to Andrew Stocky about that and some other key injuries for the Steelers. And where do they go from here? I mean, is this a good team? We'll talk to him about that coming up next hour, as well as some other NFL news and notes. We'll also get into the NBA. Robert Sarver of the Phoenix Suns suspended a year and fined $10 million. We'll tell you why coming up in hour number three as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.